You are listening to Dauber Prospects Radio, episode 23, comparing NHL and fantasy entry draft rankings, prospects graduating, signing, and a few restricted free agents to keep on your radar, and talking AHL Calder champions with George Malik. So let's get started. Hey everybody, Paul Zwanbeck here. Welcome to episode 23 of Dauber Prospects Radio, the best and only fantasy hockey program dedicated to hockey prospects. The DPR show is produced every other week for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at dauberprospects.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at @DPR_show. I am with my co-host, Peter Harling, managing editor of dauberprospects.com. Peter, hockey season is officially over. Absolutely every league has wrapped up. But we're not slowing down. It's now draft season, the most important. Expansion and entry drafts are a week away, Peter. Can you believe it?
It has been. You know what I can't believe is that we've been doing this show for almost a year now. We've been through the whole season. This is coming to the end of season one of Dauber Prospect Radio. How about that?
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. And 23 episodes in a hockey season, that's not too bad either.
Yeah, I guess we'll call it a wrap after we'll do a blitz at the NHL draft, because in case anyone, you know, missed one of our previous episodes, both you and I are going to be at the draft on the draft floor with media credentials live, talking to people, getting interviews, reaction. We'll have so much to talk about too, with the expansion draft having just completed about a day before and all the players announced, and I'm sure a truckload of trades, and then reaction to who's been drafted where and whatnot. So we'll have a couple of live from the draft episodes to look forward to, but the hockey season never really ends, much to my girlfriend's dismay. Las Vegas and San Jose have already announced their prospect camps for the month of July. They got some dates coming out, rookie development camps and then training camps. This free agency, it's going to be a pretty busy summer. Lots to talk about with prospects. So we'll go right through the summer, yeah?
Yeah, of course we'll go right through. We got a lot to talk about with the draft, and we'll also have an expansion draft episode. There's tons of stuff we can still talk about in the off season, even if they're not actually playing hockey. You know what's really awkward is Vegas comes out and says, we're going to have our prospect camp, and they have three players. How's that going to work? They're going to play
one-on-one with a spare.
Yeah, nice. No goalie. They'll just put a board in posts. The net.
Just play posts.
Oh, nice. I'm gonna pick Reed Duke, underdog. I'm going to take him as the guy that hits the most posts, which might not be the best thing. You might don't want to be known for hitting a lot of posts.
Oh, it's Shapashov all the way.
All right. We're going to put it on the line at the end of June when they start up their prospect camp. All right, Peter, let's get into the show. NHL draft rankings versus fantasy draft rankings. These were published on Dauber Prospects within the last week. You picked up a lot of opinions and rankings from several important people in the fantasy hockey world and just prospect world. So I got a couple questions. I want to pick apart your list. Does that sound good?
Yeah. So first, I just want to say thanks to all of the writers who contributed to the fantasy ranking, the draft. So that's from our own staff, Cam Robinson, Zach Devine, and Kevin Wickersham. Follow all those guys on Twitter. And then we also like to include external writers or scouts to contribute to this as well. So our very good friend and friend of the show, Steve Corianos, draft analyst, Ryan Wagman from McKean's, Scott Wheeler, who now writes for the Toronto Star, Mark Seidel, American North America Central Scouting, and Brock Otten, OHL Prospects blog. Really great writers. All these guys actually get out to the rinks, watch a lot of hockey. They know what they're talking about. So it was a real pleasure having their contribution to another fantasy ranking list. Okay, let's talk about the list.
Yeah, you ready? You ready for me to drill you?
Hit it.
All right, Hischier Patrick debate. It's still being debated. They're a week and 2 days from being named one or two. Hischier is number one in the NHL. No, Hischier is fantasy draft, and Patrick is in the NHL draft. They're opposite one and two. So you're saying Hischier is going to be the better pick in fantasy than Patrick. Why is that?
Yeah, all right. So I think they'll both both have a really strong chance of playing in the NHL next year. Without knowing what teams draft them, and I don't think it's a guarantee that they go 1 and 2. Who knows what could happen? So a lot of it will have to do with the situation that they're drafted into and what team they play for. But starting with Heischer, number one on the fantasy list, I think he's a more dynamic offensive player. So as long as he gets put in a situation where he's got support and he can be played in a sheltered role, I think he has the opportunity to have a more immediate impact on your fantasy roster next year. And that's not to say not ongoing as well. So Nolan Patrick is, you're splitting hairs between these two, I think. But I really like Nolan Patrick too. I think he's got maybe a bit better of a chance to make it to the NHL right away than Heischer does, because he was a very late draft. He missed last year's draft by a few days. So he's a little bit older, a little bit more developed. Heischer is, like I said, a more explosive offensive player. Patrick is a better all-around player. What I said about him in my scouting report on Patrick is that he's great at everything. He does everything great. He's got size. He skates well. He's good defensively. He's good offensively. Great balance. But he's not elite at anything. So he's kind of a jack of all trades, but master of none. So he's a little bit better at Heischer in some things. He's got better size and whatnot. But I think Heischer's got better offensive upside and therefore a slight edge in fantasy ranking.
Interesting. Okay. Let's move on to third overall in the NHL rankings, Miro Heiskanen. He drops 8 spots. Is it because he's a defenseman?
Yeah, pretty much. Miro Heiskanen is a player who's in the last half of the season has really, really been a riser in draft rankings to the point where he is now, I think, in contention for first overall, as a matter of fact, on a lot of scouts' opinions. I was listening to our previous guests, Adam Kimmelman, from DraftCast, and they were at the scouting combine talking to NHL scouts, and they spoke to NHL scouts, and a couple of them said, "Oh yeah, we think Heischer's number one." There's a little bit of insight on Heiskanen.
Yeah, it's pretty wild how he's jumped up. He jumped up from your previous NHL draft rankings 3 spots, so he's definitely climbed up. The big climbers in the fantasy rankings, the guys that went up 8, 9, 7 spots up from their NHL draft rankings, is Owen Tippett, followed by Nick Suzuki, and then Ili Tolvanen. So let's start with Tippett, moving up from 14th in NHL draft rankings to 4th overall in fantasy rankings. Why is that?
I think for Tippett, he projects well for fantasy because for him it's all about scoring goals, right? And that's exactly what fantasy hockey is all about. So everything he does in his game goes in support of scoring goals. He has a great shot. He's got great speed. He's got great size. And he combines all 3 of those components of his games very, very fluently together in order to create himself scoring chances. So that translates really well to fantasy hockey. It translates well to the NHL as well, of course, but there's some other holes to his game. Like when you watch him live, when he doesn't have the puck, he can be really hard to notice or appreciate what he's offering if he doesn't have the puck on his stick or if his team's not on offense. He kind of struggles in that respect. But he's 17, 18 years old, whatever he is. You know, he's got plenty of time to figure that part of his game out and to get that coached kind of out of his game. For now, based on what we have now, I think he ranks much higher for fantasy value than he does for NHL.
Next up, Nick Suzuki, moving up from 12th in the NHL rankings to 7th in the fantasy rankings. What has Nick Suzuki got that moves him up that high?
I think he's just been he rose on both charts, if I'm not mistaken. He's just had a pretty strong year, and I think he's made a believer out of a lot of people who didn't really know much about him going into the draft season. I like his game. He's a determined player. He's A lot of people call him undersized, but I think he's just an example of short. He's got strength. He can fight through checks. And he's an accomplished playmaker as well as determined scorer. He's not afraid to drive the puck to the goal. So if he makes it to the NHL, he will be an offensive contributor for sure. So a first round pick for sure. And I think he's got better fantasy value than NHL value.
All right, and then let's go with the last guy that climbed up pretty high. Right winger Eli Tolvanen went from 15th in the draft rankings to 9th in fantasy rankings. Does he have the best shot in this draft class?
It's him or Tippett. Different people will say it's one or the other, so flip a coin between the two of them, but they're very similar, and I think they're both ranked pretty close to each other in both both lists. Similar thing. The main difference between the two of them is he doesn't have the size that Tippett has, but for the both of them, it's all about high shot volume and scoring goals. So yeah, very much like Tippett.
All right, and then let's go to the very bottom of the list. Pretty much 26 to 31, Cole Lynn, Morgan Frost, Alexei Heponiemi, Josh Norris, Grant Mishmash. Where are these guys ranked in the NHL draft? Those were all the fantasy draft rankings. Where are these guys showing up on the NHL draft rankings?
Sure. I think Cole Lynn's got the potential to be a late first-round pick. Maybe early second. But most of the other guys are probably looking like second-round picks. Maybe even third round. Alexei Heponiemi. He's pretty undersized. He's 5'10", but he's only 150 pounds. So he's got some filling out to do. So that could push him into the third round. But he was the WHL Rookie of the Year. He had a really good start of the year for Finland at the Ivan Hlinka. And then he exploded in the WHL, scoring a whole bunch of points in the first few games. Carried that momentum through pretty much the whole year and ended up, as I said, being the rookie scoring leader for the Dub. He's an all-offense kind of player. So picking him earlier in a fantasy draft makes a lot of sense than he gets drafted in the NHL draft. So he's a good example of a player who, when you look at the NHL draft results from Chicago once they're out and you're doing your fantasy draft prep, wherever Heponiemi is picked in the NHL, you're going to want to move him up, kind of like Alex DeBrincat last year, right? Yeah, he fell into the second round and Chicago got him. If you waited to pick him in your second round, you probably didn't get him. Someone smarter than you probably picked him in the first round. So Heponiemi could be kind of similar situation to that. Most of these players could be.
And you had to put Grant Mishmash at the very end because of his awesome name.
I know, right? What's not to like about that? And the best thing about him is he's a bangers and mash kind of guy. He's a rambunctious forward, likes to throw some hits and whatnot. So he'd be a lot of fun to own in a fantasy league. He's a player I think you'll want to cheer for.
All right, if you want to listen to more fantasy hockey, go check out Keeping Carlson. They focus in on redraft leagues rather than keeper or dynasty leagues. They're currently in their summer series, publishing podcasts every other week. But as soon as preseason and training camps begin, they will ramp back up to weekly podcasts to begin each fantasy hockey week. Elan and Brian go in-depth on the hottest and coldest players each week, as well as having multiple mock drafts, goalie smorgasbord episodes, and much, much more. You can also support Keeping Carlson by becoming a Patreon and being a part of their Patreon-only podcast, as well as become a member of their Patreon-only Facebook group. You can also join the K-Cupful, Keeping Carlson's Ultimate Fantasy League. Check them out at keepingcarlson.com. All right, segment two, we're going to be talking about RFAs, unsigned. We're not going to talk about the top guys, Ryan Johansson, Andre Palat, Tyler Johnson. Those guys are already legitimate NHL players, even like Kuznetsov and Draisaitl, and there's a lot of legitimate NHL guys that are RFAs. We're going to talk more of the guys that are on the fringe, the guys that could get the chance to be in the NHL and probably are likely going to be in the NHL, not a top-line guy, but there's going to be a lot of players that are on the fringe. So, Peter, let's get right into it. Who do you think are going to be sign to their teams.
All right. So recently on the prospect site, our associate editor, Mark Allen, did a couple of really good ramblings talking about Eastern Conference and Western Conference RFA prospects. And that was followed up by a really nice post by Hayden, who talked about what teams have the wherewithal to sign any RFAs, because not only do you need the cap space to make the offer, you need the draft pick compensation. So those are two really good posts that you're going to want to check out. And from going over those lists, excluding the established players, like you said, I think there's a couple of players that that are going to be interesting, to say the least. So let's start with let's start at Andreas Athanasiou in Detroit. He had a breakout season. The kid's got wheels. He scores highlight reel goals on the breakaway. He's a YouTube sensation. I think he's a future cornerstone player for the Red Wings, and it'll be interesting to see if they go long-term or bridge with him. I think it's going to be a bridge contract. He doesn't really have the pedigree to skip the bridge and go right into a multi-year, multi-million dollar contract. He had a good season. That's fantastic. I think it's more of a prove you can do it more than once type thing, being a fourth round pick. So Athanasiou, what do you think, Paul? Is he going to get signed long-term or bridge?
I think it'll be a bridge, and I think this has something to do with the expansion draft. I think they're trying to have a workaround of not signing him yet, because then they don't have to worry about protecting him, because I believe if Vegas tries to sign him as a RFA, they're just going to sign whatever they try to sign him for. So I think this is a workaround that the Detroit Red Wings have kind of figured out, a loophole that they don't need to sign him yet, so why would they? Because then they have to protect him, I believe. So, because it doesn't make sense that he's still unsigned. Like, I just can't see how they haven't found a deal for him. So I believe that's the case, and yeah, I still think it'll be a bridge deal, probably a two-year contract to approve a deal that he can still do what he did this past year.
Well, it's still pretty early in the offseason. There has been a few RFA signings, but for the most part, these will start coming in July. Here, another interesting player, and I had a really interesting debate with my dad about this player, who's a big Leaf fan, and that's Connor Brown. So the Leafs have a pretty much all-rookie team last year, and highlighted with some superstar players, Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Zaitsev. And kind of lost in the shuffle is the fact that Connor Brown scored 20 goals for the Leafs last year. And now he's an RFA. So if you look at players that score 20-goal contracts have 20-goal seasons and then sign a contract, I think Connor Brown could be in line for a pretty decent raise. But again, I think this is a player who's coming in without the pedigree. You know, he's not a first-round pick. He did have some pretty prolific scoring seasons in junior, and you know, he did well in the AHL with the Marlies when he was there. But he's just been a really underrated player for all of his career, I think, and I think that is going to work against him in contract negotiations. How do you think? I'm kind of a bit of a Leaf fan myself, so I'm looking through blue-colored glasses. What's your take on Connor Brown, Paul?
I think he would be, across the league, one of the better rookies if he wasn't with the Leafs. I think being with the Leafs has kind of put him in the shadow of those 3, 4, 5 other top rookies. I think it's going to be a bridge contract still, just to say, prove it again. Like, you look like you scored, but is it because of the other rookies on your lines that have been helping you out? But looking at the RFA list and the range that he's in of the same aged guys, the same amount of money that other guys are making, there's not many 20 goal scorers. Connor Sheary did it this year. He played mostly with Crosby, so he's in the same boat. Josh Anderson from Columbus Blue Jackets had 17 goals, so I think Connor Brown's going to be kind of stuck in the shadows of the three top dogs in Toronto.
Yeah, he might be hard-pressed to repeat his 20-goal performance again in his career, and at least in the short term, because Look at the players he has to compete for ice time with. We talked a little bit before we started recording about him, and he played a little bit with Austin Matthews, but as the season wore on, the line was Matthews with Nylander and Zach Hyman, and that was pretty much a lock for the second half of the season in the playoffs. So what line he's able to crack could be a challenge for him, because he's such a Charlie Hustle kind of guy, and he's, you know, the coach loves him. So the coach will give him ice time, but it might be on the third or fourth line as an energy role player with offensive upside, but not an offensive player first. It's going to be interesting to see how this all shakes out with Toronto for sure, and I'll be curious to see what they do. So let's talk about a defenseman. Let's go Slater Cuckoo, Tampa Bay. So he just was eliminated in the Calder Cup Finals last night in Game 6. I was watching that game, and in the dying minutes, he's on the ice. They're running the point through him, trying to score a goal to tie it with the net empty, and he was unable to make anything happen. And there's a couple of times in the game I was watching him play, and I think he's just, I don't think he has the confidence to play above the AHL level right now. I believe he has the skill and the ability to do so, but I just watch him play, and he has an opportunity to take a risk and be creative, and he never does. He always just makes the safe play. Bort glassing out, dump and chase, pass it, make a safe play. So I think that is going to work against him in his contract negotiations. I think he's going to get another two-way deal. I think he might be looking at some more AHL time before he can make it to the NHL. Where do you see this going with Cuckoo?
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think it'll be a two-way contract.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about a couple Detroit Red Wings cast-offs and Timu Pulkkinen and Thomas Yurko. Which one do you want to start with?
Let's go Yurko. He's the more popular guy, I think.
Okay, so he ended up going to Chicago. And as we know, Chicago is always looking for young players with low-end contracts that they can put into the roster. So Yurko's an RFA. He's coming off his ELC. If he wants to raise, he hasn't really done much to prove he can do it, and he's probably going to be pretty hard-pressed to get it from the Hawks, who are very cap-sensitive. Do you think he plays in Chicago next year, or do you think he kind of works his way out? Could Vegas be a factor here?
I have a feeling he's going to stay in Chicago, and they're going to give a really limited cap hit to him. I don't think he's going to make much more than what he made last year, $900,000. He might get up to $1 million, but the Blackhawks can't afford that, more than that, for a third line guy who could be a second line guy because of injuries. But I have a feeling he'll stay with Chicago because they'll give him the chance. He didn't play very much with Chicago this year, so I have a feeling he'll get maybe $1 million for 1 year.
He'll be waiver exempt, so if he's not able to make an impact on the Hawks, they've got a lot of other young players, and we talked about some of them earlier on some of our initial episodes, guys like Tyler Mott, Nick Schultz, Vincent Hinostroza. They'll have DeBrincat in the fold next year. He's got to put up or shut up. All right, Timu Pulkkinen bounced around a little bit last year. Detroit, Minnesota, Arizona. I might be missing another team. So the thing about this guy is he's just got an all-worldly shot. He can shoot the puck like nobody's business. Unfortunately, that's about all he does, and he's not very big. Arizona's got lots of offensive weapons coming down the pipe. Is he going to get – I mean, I don't think he's going to be able to crack the Coyotes roster next year. So if he stays in the organization, my opinion is it's going to be in Tucson. I'm not even sure he can crack the Tucson roster with the players that they've got coming down the pipe. He might get forced right out of the organization.
Yeah, and it's interesting because his AHL numbers are outstanding. Like, he's a great AHL player, but is he a career AHL player now? Like, he doesn't seem to have his NHL game up to par. And yeah, being in Arizona is no help to him. There's just a ton of talent coming through, and we're going to talk about it later. But the Coyotes are deep, and Pulkkinen might have to find a new team if he wants to play in the NHL.
Yeah, he might actually be better off sort of going back to Finland.
Yeah.
All right, that sucks for him. Let's talk about one of the Richies, Brett Richie, Dallas Stars. He played the better part of the season last year, and he looked good doing it. He's had his challenges and his struggles making it into the NHL. He's had some injuries. He's been up and down from the NHL to the AHL, but in my opinion, last year he looked like he proved that he can play in the NHL. And I think he's going to get a one-way contract to play with the Stars next year. I think it's going to be a bridge contract. I think it's going to be a cap-friendly hit. And I think if I were him, I would roll the dice on a short-term one-year deal and then hope to have a really strong season. I mean, he could even play his way onto a line with Seguin and Benn. He played with them for stints last year, but so did pretty much everyone on the Dallas team because they had so many injuries. But that might be a gamble if I were him and his agent that I'd be willing to take. I believe in him as a player. I think he's got upside in value, and I think he would probably be better served on a one-year deal and then sign a much larger contract after that. How do you see Richie working out?
He should take a one-year deal and learn absolutely everything he can from Jamie Benn. He's a power forward, and Jamie Benn's probably the best power forward out there right now. Maybe not in the past year because he's been dealing with injuries, but yeah, just take in everything that Jamie Benn says and just.
Yeah. All right. If I'm Dallas, I do that too. So let's stick it, keep it out west, and let's talk about a player. We've brought him up a couple times on the podcast before. Is Paul Ledoux, Los Angeles Kings. I think this guy is the Kings' best defensive prospect. I think he's way under the radar in a lot of fantasy leagues, and he had a little bit of a cup of coffee in the NHL at the end of the year, and didn't look out of place. I think he is in a position where he's going to want to sign a bridge contract. He'll need a little bit of term on it, 2 years or whatever, at a pretty reasonable million and a bit cap hit kind of range. And I think that when he comes out of that contract, he'll be in a really strong negotiating position to get both term and money. So the Kings are going to want to buy up some of his unrestricted free agent years, and in order to do that, they're going to have to pay to do it. So I think this he lines up well for what he's looking for now. And if he ends up being a bust, it's a short-term contract, and he flames out, and the Kings dodge a bullet. So I think it works well both ways. What do you think about him, Paul?
He has a chance to crack the Kings roster next year because I have a feeling probably a defenseman's going to get taken from the Kings in the expansion draft. So if that happens, there's going to be a door open for Ledoux, and I'm pretty sure he can fill the void that they need a 4, 5, 6 defenseman in their lineup. So I really hope he gets re-signed with the Kings and finds a spot in that back end defenseman, and then builds up just like kind of Jake Muzzin did. He kind of became a fifth, fourth defenseman and then found chemistry with Drew Doughty, and now he's number two in the lineup. So I have a feeling Paul Ledoux might do the same, maybe find chemistry with Alec Martinez and go from there.
Yeah, I think the Kings are going to be buying out Matt Green as well, so there'll be a roster spot open, and I think it's his for the taking. Coming out east, let's talk a little bit about Stanislav Galiev, Washington Capitals. Where do you see this one going?
I have a feeling that this was in Mark Allen's ramblings, his Eastern Conference side of ramblings. He said that he thinks he's going to look elsewhere for a contract because there's a shakeup in Washington. But that's why I think he's going to get a contract with Washington, because they need that young blood, the young kid come in and try and make a name for himself. And Stanislav Galiev's got that in his game where he can become a great point player. So I'm putting him on my watch list, and hopefully I can target him in the off season, maybe before he gets a contract, because if he does go elsewhere, he's going to have a great chance to be in any NHL lineup, I believe, this coming year in October.
There's going to be a roster spot open for sure because they've got two unrestricted free agents, and I don't see how they can afford to keep both Justin Williams and TJ Oshie. So that certainly opens the door for a guy like Galiev to walk into a top six role next year. All right. Let's talk about a trio of Columbus Blue Jacket players, particularly goaltenders. All three of their goalies are RFAs, Joni Corposalo, Anton Forsberg, and Oscar Dansk, with Corposalo having just re-signed. That's one down, two to go. All three of these players have had their profiles updated in the last week, by the way, on the site, Dobber Prospects, by our new Columbus Blue Jackets writer, Mark Henrich. So give the Blue Jackets page a look. It's been neglected pretty hard for the last little while now, but we finally been able to get a dedicated writer to get it up to speed. So all you Columbus fans, rejoice. You've got updates coming. So Corposalo, Forsberg, Dansk. Corposalo's in. That leaves Forsberg and Dansk to be signed. Do we think Vegas could be a factory here? That's a lot of goalies.
Yeah, and I know we go to every single team and we talk about teams, and everybody's, or Vegas is drafting a goalie from every team. They're all taking a young goalie. Well, they can't. They can only have three goalies. So when I did my mock draft on DobberProspects.com, I ended up taking Anton Forsberg because there wasn't much else in Columbus available. So I have a feeling they'll re-sign Forsberg if he doesn't get taken in the expansion draft. And Oscar Dansk, I think, has got to find a new team to try and make his way up the depth chart, because he's kind of fallen down hard being in the Blue Jackets organization. And Corposalo has been given the chance to cover Bobrovsky's injuries, who Bobrovsky does get injured more often than not. So being his backup is a pretty good spot. So I think Corposalo is going to end up staying there. And if Forsberg stays in Columbus, then he's going to have to fight his way up. And I think he's behind the eight ball right now. So maybe he's hoping to go to Vegas to get a new life in the NHL and try to make it there. But I think Dansk is in a heap of trouble.
I'm really disappointed with Dansk. I've been a fan of his for a while now. He came over to the OHL, and he was the goalie for the Erie Otters. And he was fantastic. He was lights out. The second year there, the first year they were just terrible. But then McDavid came and he turned it around, and he had a great season. Our Winnipeg Jets writer, Dave Dickinson, tuned me into him. Dave is a real good draft prospect follower as well. And he thought that he could have been the best goalie in the draft class in the year he was drafted. So I've been paying kind of close attention to his career, hoping that I could pick him up in a fantasy league. But once he moved to pro, it's not really worked out for Dansk. He kind of pooped the bed a little bit in the AHL, got demoted to ECHL, pooped that bed too, got sent back to Europe and had a bit of a bounce back, but then regressed again last year playing in Europe. So at this point, I'm not prepared to write him off. I think he's got some confidence issues going on, or who knows what, maybe in his personal life. But from what I saw in him in junior, I believe in him as a player. I can't see Columbus extending him an offer. I think they're just going to let him go. He probably doesn't get a contract until he proves he deserves it. So if you own him in fantasy hockey, I think it's time to pull the plug, take him off your roster, and maybe put him on your watch list. If you can find someone who's willing to take him in the trade, by all means do that, if you can get anything in return for him. But like I said, he's a player that I'll be looking to watch down the road. All right, let's talk about some players who are graduating into professional hockey, prospects from in North America, so from CHL and NCAA mainly. How's that sound?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's start with Boston. Boston's got two prospects that you should be excited about. The first one's kind of a slam dunk. Charlie McAvoy walked right into the Stanley Cup playoffs, didn't look out of place. I think we talked about him a little bit on our special podcast with Jeff Merrick. He thinks that McAvoy is going to be a Norris Trophy contender. I don't disagree. I think he's the next in a long line of generational Boston Bruins star defensemen as soon as next year. If you can get him in your fantasy league, in a draft or a trade from someone who doesn't value him appropriately, by all means, do it. What do you think about McAvoy? It's hard to top that.
The fact that he jumped right into the National Hockey League playoffs from college is remarkable. There's not many players that can do that, and he's taken over the reins on that back end as being the stud on the Bruins, and it's already begun. He's not even 20 games into a season, so. Yeah, if any chance I get to get McAvoy, I'll overpay for him. He's going to be a stud defenseman.
Yeah, in the Dauber Prospect Report, the top 50 rankings, it's only for players who have zero NHL games played. And for me, McAvoy was ranked number one ahead of any other prospect, including Patrick and Isher. I ranked him number one.
That's impressive.
Yeah. So the other guy they got coming up, JFK, I watched him play a little bit in college this year. The Beanpot Tournament was on TV. And wow, he's an impact player. He's not the most dynamic offensive scorer, but he was doing something in every game that had an impact on the game. It was either scoring or throwing elbows in the corner, fighting for pucks, or a really strong back check to take away a scoring chance from the other team. I'm a big fan of this kid, and his initials are pretty cool too, JFK, Jacob Forbaska Carlson. I think he's the kind of player that if you're a Boston Bruin fan, you're going to want to buy his jersey, but I don't think you want to pick him too early in your fantasy draft. Where do you see him going?
Yeah, I think he's stuck in behind Bergeron and Krejci, but he's going to learn his craft, his centerman craft, from a very, very good two-way centerman, Patrice Bergeron, and I think he's got the skill set to be able to be that two-way centerman as well. So he might have to sit in the shadows for a couple seasons, so that's why he might not be as fantasy relevant, but once one of those guys moves on to a new team or retires or gets injured and can't play anymore, Forsbacka Carlson is going to jump all over that and become a one or two centerman in this league.
Do you think he's going to crack the roster or serve some time in Providence?
I want him to be in the Bruins in Boston for the start of the year, but I have a feeling Boston takes their time with prospects, so he'll probably be in Providence for a couple months, and they'll have to bring him up because he's going to play outstanding.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd start him in Providence. We'll give him the 9 games and whatnot and see how he does there. But I'd probably want to put him in Providence for a while and let him play a little bit of pro hockey there first. Let's move on. Let's talk about the Ottawa Senators. So I think we've covered Thomas Chabot ad nauseum on a lot of our previous episodes. So we're going to spare the listener repeating how much I love Thomas Chabot and how much you don't. Let's talk about Colin White. We've talked about him too, but not as much. He went up and down a little bit between the NHL and the AHL last year. I got an opinion about that, but I want to hear what you have to say first.
He definitely fought his way to being a Senator and not going back to Binghamton, but I feel like he's going to be in tough to make the roster. The Ottawa Senators play a certain way, and I don't know if Colin White can jump on board with the way they play. It's more of a system game, and I feel like Colin White is more of his way, and that's the way he wants to play. And going through the negotiating rights of being put on the Ottawa team or the Binghamton team, I think it shows that he's not willing to jump into a system like the Ottawa Senators play. So I don't know how well it's going to help his game, and it might deter him to be in that system and might not get as many minutes and might be in the doghouse more nights than not. And I really hoped he could jump into the NHL and be like a Clayton Keller or that draft group that kind of all gets put in the same boat, like Brock Besser and those guys. And we're going to talk about those guys later, but I think Colin White is going to have a hard learning curve to make it into the NHL. And I have a feeling he will be in the NHL because he kind of forced his way at the end of this year. So he'll probably be there, but he'll probably end up on the third or fourth line and have to work his way up and be in the doghouse most nights and or in the press box, and I think that's going to hurt his game in the long run.
I think the fact that he got a sniff of the NHL last season will really serve him well this whole summer. So he did really well in the AHL, and I think if he just played out the end of the season in the AHL and played really well, it would be good for his confidence, but I think it could hurt him in the off season, and then he would, you know, maybe not really appreciate what he has to do to play in the NHL, and maybe take it easy and feel like, yeah, I got this. This is no problem. So he went and played a couple of games for the Sens and wasn't great there. I think that could end up, you know, being a really good reminder for him all summer of it's not a guarantee that he's going to make it in the NHL. And then if he wants to make it, he's going to have to work his tail off this summer and practice and train and work out real, real hard and then show up at training camp, not assuming he's going to make anything. He's got to prove he's got to make it. So we'll see how that works out for him. But you know, it's just a matter of time until he does crack the roster, I think. And when he does, he'll have some pretty good fantasy upside as well. So let's talk about a defenseman. Let's go to Winnipeg. They could maybe use a little bit of bolstering in their prospect pool on the back end. And the help is on the way. Tucker Poolman is graduating from the NCAA. He's been University of North Dakota, so he's got a championship under his belt. He finished the season last year, 38 games, 30 points, pretty solid as a defenseman. And unfortunately, he had, I think it might have been a broken leg or something like that. But anyways, he had a terrible injury that prohibited him from being able to play any pro games at the end of last year. So he's got a summer of rehab to look forward to. But depending on what happens with the Jets' blue line this summer, if they're lucky, maybe Vegas helps them out and takes a defenseman, but I think that's unlikely. So Poolman is going to turn pro. Where do we see him going? They need some help on the back end, but do you think he plays AHL?
I believe he'll play a year of AHL.
Yeah. Yeah. And that wouldn't be a bad thing.
No.
It would be if you own him in your fantasy pool and you're counting on him to contribute. But in the long run, if you own him in a keeper pool, I think that'll be better off. But for my money, he's their best defensive prospect. Okay, let's talk Tyson Jost. Speaking of players who were drafted, he was a great pick by the Colorado Avalanche. He's a one-and-done college player. He played 1 year, and now he's turning pro. Is he a lock to make it on the Avalanche, and is that what is in his best interest?
Yes and yes.
Too good for the AHL, huh?
Yeah, I believe so. And Colorado needs help.
And they're going to have, I mean, it seems like a foregone conclusion that, you know, Matt Duchene is going to get traded at some point this summer. Maybe Landeskog as well. So if Duchene's on the outs, it sounds like they're targeting a defenseman as the primary piece of return in a trade for him, as well as a pick and a prospect. If that's the return on Duchene, then that certainly opens up a center ice position for Jost, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement that Jost is playing top six with Colorado next year. Okay, let's do another West team and Vancouver. We talked a little bit about Brock Besser before. He played a little bit in the NHL, scored his first NHL goal. He's in the NHL to stay, yeah?
Yeah, most definitely. I think he's going to do well in Vancouver, and they need they're rejuvenating their roster. I think once the Sedins are gone, they're going to have quite a few big holes that they need to fill. But I think Brock Besser's there for next year, and he'll be one of those guys that fills those holes once they are gone.
Yeah, it could be a lean year for the Canucks next year. They finished pretty low in the standings this year. I like what they're doing, though. They've got some great foundational pieces in each position. And if they come out of the draft with a center with their first overall pick, I think they pick fifth or sixth, so they can get a real good center there to go with Besser, a winger, Jolevi, a defenseman, Demko, a goalie, And then they've picked up a couple nice prospects recently in trades in Jonathan Dahlin and Nikolai Goldobin. So the turnaround, I don't think they have to endure years of suffering the way the Oilers and the Leafs did. I think they're fast-tracking it, and they're about to inherit a lot of cap space when the Sedin contracts expire as well. Let's talk about Arizona. Clayton Keller. He's going to graduate and turn pro. Straight to the NHL?
Yes, most definitely. He looked pretty good at the end of the year last year. There's definitely a learning curve that he had to add to his game, but once he figures that out, he's going to be a stud.
You know, I think Arizona Coyotes next year could be what the Maple Leafs were this year. The Leafs were a very heavy rookie team, very, very young, lots of skill, and it served them really well. You know, they made the playoffs, albeit by 1 point, and they really probably shouldn't have, but they were healthy all year. And they looked pretty good in the playoffs against Washington. I think they're trending up hard, and I think Arizona is just, they're like one step behind them. So the Leafs last year graduated Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, Nylander, Zaitsev, all turned pro full-time with the Leafs in the NHL. Next year, Arizona's going to do the same thing with Keller, Strom, Fisher, D'Angelo. They already got Krause there. Max Domi is only a couple years into his career. So is Duclair. Chychrun. I mean, they're loaded for bear with prospects here. Am I off base here, or is that the way you see it too, Paul?
That's exactly how I see it. And they don't have a really great goaltender, kind of the same boat that Toronto's in. Frederick Anderson can stop a puck, but he's not going to win many games. And if they end up losing Mike Smith, then by all means, Louis Domingue can fill that role. And Mike Smith is more than capable of stealing at least, say, a handful of games in a season. So I think, yeah, they look like they're building the next Maple Leafs, just a year late, and maybe not quite as top talent. Like, they don't have an Austin Matthews, but Clayton Keller's going to be good. Dylan Strome's going to be good. Christian Fischer has shown he's pretty decent. And then on the back end, D'Angelo's just got to get his mind right and be a great defenseman. And OEL is going to still be there, hopefully. I don't think they're going to move him. I think he's one of the only untouchables on the roster. And then you got guys that have been there, Max Domi and Duclair. And yeah, I think you're right. They're the younger Maple Leafs. Well, maybe not younger, but a year late Maple Leafs.
Yeah, I wouldn't be gun shy about drafting any of these guys in fantasy drafts. I mean, if you look at the Leafs roster and how they contributed in fantasy leagues and how they stack up points wise against older established players on better teams, didn't take long for those players to establish themselves as legitimate fantasy options on what was the year before a terrible team with the Leafs, like the worst in the league. And I think you're going to see the same thing in Arizona. I think they're going to be a high-scoring team. I think these kids are going to put the puck in the net on a pretty regular basis. I think 60-point range is not out of the realm of reach for some of these kids, Keller and Strome in particular.
I have a feeling that Keller's going to be the shadow of Dylan Strome. A lot of fantasy people probably follow the Memorial Cup, and they saw Dylan Strome, what he did in the Memorial Cup, and he was fantastic. And I think they're going to maybe forget about Clayton Keller. So I would highlight Clayton Keller near the end of even redraft leagues, that he's going to be there near the end of your drafts. I have a feeling he's being the forgotten kid.
Yeah, I would argue that Keller even has a better resume. He's won Olympic gold and Strom didn't.
Yeah.
And then of course a couple other players that are graduating. We talked about them midway in our initial season as well. NCAA signees Zach Aston-Reese, Gavin Bayreuther. Spencer Foo's been in the news lately too. Sounds like he's going to be signing pretty soon. I don't think any of these guys are what I would consider to be NHL roster locks. And even if they do make the team, I think you'd only be picking these guys in the deepest of leagues. But they are certainly players that you're going to want to put on your watch list. I mean, Aston-Reese at the top of the list, signed with Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh has a tendency of pulling rabbits out of their hats with prospects that kind of come out of nowhere and can contribute. I guess playing on a line with Sidney Crosby will do that for you. So, you know, not to be forgotten prospects. All right, so that's kind of a wrap on this segment. I would like to remind everybody that our good friend, the draft analyst, Steve Kornianos, to visit his site. Some things you can find if you go and you check out Draft Analyst would be he's got rankings for the entry draft. He does the top 500 players. So pretty much anybody who's relevant for the draft, even remotely, you will find his comments on them there or a ranking for them. You can see where they are. He's got profiles for the draft eligible players. That's what he's working on right now. He's got, I think, 40 to 60, something in that range of profiles, and he's adding a couple per day. I noticed on the Hockey Futures site, he's got a thread on the prospect forum there, and people are asking him, can you do a profile on this player and that player? And then like the day later, he's got it posted. He's also got a full 7-round mock draft. Not too many places go all 7 rounds, but you can find Steve's there. And of course, listen to his podcast, follow him on Twitter, The Draft Analyst. All right, let's take our second break, Paul. And when we come back, let's talk about the AHL champions, Grand Rapids Griffiths, with George Malik from Kukla's Corner, who writes all about Detroit Red Wings and their prospects. Right, we're back on Dauber Prospects Radio. It's Peter Harling and Paul Zwambag, and now it's time to be joined by our guest this week, who is the Kukla's Corner Red Wing blogger via the Malik Report. We are joined now by George Malik, who was able to firsthand take in the Grand Rapids Griffiths playoff run all the way to the Memorial Cup, which culminated with a championship last night. And George, thanks for coming on the show and welcome to Dauber Prospects Radio.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So first of all, what's it like to be so close to a team and follow them as a reporter to a championship final? That must have been exciting.
It's exciting. It's a little bit gratifying when you kind of have a rooting interest in your back pocket, and it was real surreal going on the ice with the team last night because they let the reporters on as soon as the players stopped celebrating in the Zamboni entrance, and you know it was just amazing to be able to hang out for an hour on the ice and watch people that I've gotten to know over the past couple of years celebrate a championship that was really hard fought. I mean, everybody on the Griffins roster talked about how incredibly difficult the series was and how great the Syracuse Crunch were, and to see the Griffins come on out on top of just such a pitched battle was awesome.
Was that their toughest opponent, Syracuse, or maybe the Bay gave them a good run?
Yeah, it was 6 games, and it could have been 7, and it could have been 7 the other way. Yeah, and everybody agreed with that. They felt that they were playing the Tampa Bay Lightning's AHL affiliate, and they were really evenly matched. So there were some really incredibly exciting games.
Yeah, I got to watch a few because the AHL, God bless them, the AHL Live app is free for the finals every year. So that was great to be able to watch a couple of the games. Paul and I have a few players in particular that we want to hit on and talk to you about. But let's start with the player that you recommended we talked about first, and that's Thomas Nosek. You were telling me before we started recording. I was going to say went on air, but this isn't radio. He's a pretty prominent player. He's a pretty good sleeper pick, and I think a lot of the people that listen to this podcast are in fantasy hockey pools, and that is exactly the kind of dirt they're looking to dig up. So tell us a little bit about Thomas Nosek.
To me, Nosek is, I would call him an ultimate sleeper pick. And I wouldn't call him somebody that you're gonna grab right away. I'd call him somebody that you would grab in a deep draft or a late round pick, because he's really slated to skate on the fourth line in Detroit. But he's 23, he's 6'2", 210, and he had 41 points in 51 regular season games, but he led the Grand Rapids Griffins in scoring. He had 22 points in 19 games, and as I said, Nosek was sort of the Griffins' Mr. Everything. He was their number one center. He was their number one PK center. He was their number one power play center. In a crucial juncture in the game, Nosek was usually out taking the face off. He did whatever was necessary. And although Tyler Bertuzzi won the playoff MVP, very deservedly so, I would say that Nosek was one of the Griffins' most valuable players. Again, he's not slated to graduate to the Red Wings' second line or anything, but if you're looking for an older player, undrafted, who may have some potential, he's an intriguing candidate.
Excellent. And Thomas Nosek is 18% owned in Fantrax, so he's probably available to most of the listeners. Let's move to the MVP of the Calder Cup, Tyler Bertuzzi. He had a pretty outstanding playoffs this year.
Bertuzzi, he not only had 19 points in 19 games, 50 penalty minutes. I mean, if he's somebody that you're looking for in a league where you're looking for both points and penalty minutes, he's always going to put up a decent amount of those, because he's just such a pest. And I wouldn't say that he follows after his uncle in that respect. He's more of somebody that just sort of, maybe in fact he does, because he just gets under everybody's skin, and it's just the way he is. There's no, I asked him, is it something last night, is it something that you learn? And he said, no, it's not something you learn. It's just something that you do. He won the MVP. I have some players on Syracuse that outscored him by up to 10 points, because he was just so integral to Grand Rapids' playoff run, and because he's been so integral to their past couple of playoff runs. He's already the all-time leading scorer in playoff goals for Grand Rapids, and he's been around for parts of three playoff runs. And he's tremendously fast. He's got good hands around the net. He likes to go to the net. He likes to stay at the net. He digs out pucks down low. He's a very underrated passer. He keeps his head up while he's skating, and he keeps his body upright while he's skating. So he's always looking around for teammates, and he's just a pain in the ass. And it's really fun, and it's really fun to watch him if he's on your team, and it's really terrible to watch him if he's on the other team, because he just finds a way to get under everybody's skin and then score a key goal at a key time.
I noticed he had a low shooting total, and his shot percentage was 23.7 this playoff. So is that normal for Tyler Bertuzzi? Does he not shoot a lot, and he still is able to put the puck in the net?
He usually shoots a little more. It turns out that he was battling some injuries. He was playing with a hand that got infected in a fight. He shoots a little more than that, but it's not a whole bunch of shots. He's somebody who, like I said, not only scores. It's not necessarily that he's going to score a gigantic volume of goals at the NHL level. It's that he's going to score important goals. And he just has a knack for doing that. And those goals pile up.
Yeah, he's a player that I've been watching since his days in Guelph, and he slipped under the radar a little bit because he lost a lot of time to injury. But Detroit saw something in him that they liked, and they picked him, and it's going to pay off, I think, big time in the long run. He's a great bangers and mash league kind of player. Yeah. Let's move on to another player, Svechnikov. So Andrei Svechnikov is a player that's getting a lot of talk for the upcoming 2018 draft. So his older brother, Evgeny, and he's a rookie this year in the AHL, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and he had a very good rookie season and a very good playoff for Grand Rapids. What's his game all about? Is it about goal scoring or playmaking or a little bit more, or what's up with him?
He's about 6'2", 205. He had, he actually had a very good second half for the Griffins after really struggling coming out of Cape Breton in the queue. He ended up putting up 20 goals and 31 assists for 51 points, which is very solid. And he had 12 points in 19 playoff games. He's not quite as dynamic as his brother, but he's a big, thick body who will again, is another player that will go into traffic and come out with a puck. He definitely will score his share of goals, and he can put up a decent amount of assists as well. I think that he's somebody who's just scratching the surface of his potential. I'm not exactly predicting him to become the next 30 goal scorer or something, but he was on a line with another first year pro and a very undersized player in Kyle Criscolo, and a sort of more seasoned pro in Matt Laurito. And both of those guys are about 5'8". And Svechnikov sort of carried the line in terms of the size and strength aspect of it. And he's got a lot of potential, at least from the Red Wings' perspective. He's one of their best prospects. He's somebody who could theoretically be a 10 to 15 goal scorer at the NHL level. I would say on the upside 15, you know, and he's pretty young. He's just starting out. So he's somebody who could perhaps, unlike some of his teammates and unlike most Red Wings prospects, be on a faster track to the NHL.
How's his skating?
His skating is really good. It's not fantastic, but he gets around very well, and he's very strong on his feet.
I was really impressed with his line mate's speed in the game I watched last night. I don't know how to pronounce his name correctly.
Criscolo and Laurito.
Yeah, Criscolo.
Criscolo and Cool Ranch, as they call him.
There is a play where there was going to be an icing, and he just left the defenseman in his dust, and he blew. Yeah, like the defenseman had at least 2 stride head start on him, and by center he was already past him. He just blew right by him. It was amazing. That kid can skate. Does he have NHL upside? I've never heard of him until last night.
Criscolo came out of the NCAA, and I would say that that he doesn't have that much NHL upside just because he's 5'8", but because he can skate so fast and because this was his first pro season, it remains to be seen how much if he has a figurative growth spurt in his second pro season, he could launch himself onto the prospect list for sure.
Anything's possible. Another really undersized player who I think does have NHL upside that I'd really like to get your thoughts on is Joe Higgetts, an undrafted prospect who walked on to training camp and walked out with a contract. I think that was 2 years ago. He's a defenseman. Tell us a little about Higgetts and how you think his upside and projection is looking right now.
he's really one of my favorite players because of his work ethic and because of his personality. I remember when he came to the Red Wings summer development camp prior to the training camp in which he got his contract. And he just, he's 5'8", he's 178 pounds, 180. And he plays like he has his center of gravity is a foot or two below the ice. He's able to launch into some pretty hard hits on occasion. He's not Nicholas Cronwall, but he can nail some guys. And he had a really good rookie pro season. He didn't post that many points in the playoffs, eight points in 19 games. But he had 34 points in the regular season in 73 games, which is very solid for a first year pro. Again, he's not big, but he played on the Griffins' second defensive pair with Nathan Page, the captain. And I keep on hearing suggestions that he needs to be somebody who plays a lot of sheltered minutes, and that he's not going to have much NHL upside unless he dramatically improves in his skill set. And I just don't think that's correct because of who he is, because of his work ethic, and because he could be a smaller defenseman who makes a difference, just because he's that determined, and his track record is very short at this point, but I wouldn't write him off, and I wouldn't count him out for anything.
So for projecting him, and if he makes it to the NHL, his fantasy value would be more geared towards hits and blocks. Does he have a lot of offensive upside or power play opportunity?
I'd go with hits and blocks. I don't know if he's going to be somebody who's going to get on the power play immediately, but he's somebody who makes a nuisance of himself. Again, surprisingly, given his size. And I would say that from a fantasy hockey perspective, he's somebody who you're going to get again in a very deep league, but he's also somebody that you're going to be rooting for along the way, and sometimes you need those players.
Is it a possibility he could grow into like a Ryan Ellis? It'd take him 3 or 4 years to develop his game into professional league, and because Ryan Ellis is also a pretty small guy, and he took a while to come into the league and make his name known, but I think in his fourth year he finally kind of flew off the radar. Do you think he's got that potential?
I think at the very top end, if everything goes right for Joe Hickett, he's got some Ryan Ellis potential. So, but I wouldn't bet the farm on him.
All right, perfect. Let's move to the back end. Jared Kuro kind of stood on his head during the whole Calder Cup championship. His numbers weren't as good when he played for Detroit, 346, 887 save percentage in 14 games. But when he went to the Griffins, his numbers got a whole lot better, and in the playoffs he just was outstanding. What do you think of Jared Kuro?
Another fan favorite here. He's the first goalie that the Red Wings really drafted, or they didn't draft him, they signed him out of Northern Michigan for his size, and they basically took a blank slate, took a guy who had to have reconstructive shoulder surgery, and they made him into a really good goalie with a lot of patience, a lot of coaching, and a lot of hard work on Jared's part. He's a hybrid netminder. I wouldn't call him a strict butterfly. I wouldn't call him a battler in the stand-up sense, but he's got a very good stylistic tendencies. He's generally a good puck handler, with the exception of the first goal in last night's game, which was a little iffy. And he's just working on his consistency. He's definitely a late bloomer, being that he's 25, but he's about to graduate to the NHL. I think if the Red Wings are able to move Jimmy Howard, he will be the backup and to Peter Mrazek. And I think that there's a lot of potential there.
Yeah, and he's kind of stuck right now. He probably doesn't want to go back to the HL because he won the Calder Cup, so he wants to move on up and get the opportunity in the NHL. But Howard and Mrazek are both signed. Howard another 2 years and Mrazek one more year. So he's just banking on Howard to get moved?
I think that the Red Wings are eventually going to move one of their goaltenders, even if it is Mrazek. And the sort of the intonations, especially from the Red Wings beat writers, have been that eventually it's going to be Coro and somebody. So there's a potential for a lot of playing time there.
That's interesting. I kind of want to go back to the blue line for a quick sec here. Let's talk about Robbie Rousseau. He is a player who was originally drafted by the Islanders, was unsigned, went back into the draft, was undrafted, and then I believe he was signed as a free agent by the Red Wings. This is out of college, if I'm not mistaken. How is he coming along? He seems to, scouts saw something in him. Obviously, at one point, he was drafted and then thrown back, and he's made some strides since then. How's he looking?
Well, he was a player who had Pickett-like numbers in a lot fewer games. He had 32 points in 58 regular season games. He had 7 assists in the playoffs. He played on the first defensive pair with Brian Lashoff. And he probably, if you're looking for somebody with the most Rafalski or Ellis potential, he's 6 feet tall. He's about 190 pounds. He's a terrible interview because he's the son of a reporter, so he knows how to give a really short copy. but he played a very pivotal role with the Griffins. He worked as their first defenseman, on the power play when they used a defenseman on the power play, and he really keyed the breakout. He's somebody who is almost mistake-free, which is a very rare quality to find in a defenseman. He's somebody that sometimes you don't notice because he's just making the right play the vast majority of the time. And he can sort of disappear into the woodwork, but that doesn't mean that he's not doing a good job. Sometimes he's at his best when he's unnoticed, but suddenly he'll appear on the score sheet because he's fired a slick goal or authored a really great play.
Does he have offensive fantasy upside or not really?
Yeah. Somebody who I would say has, if you're looking for somebody from the Grand Rapids Griffins who has the most fantasy upside, I would say it's Rousseau.
Oh, cool. Okay, Rousseau is also an RFA. So there's a couple other restricted free agents within the system there. Ouellette and Martin Ferk in particular. These three players, what's their outlook look like? I guess Rousseau looks promising. Do you think they'll all get qualifying offers? Do any or all of them have NHL trajection?
I definitely think that Ouellette is going to get re-signed. He still needs to work on his skating a little bit, but he's acknowledged that and said that he needs to gain another step. He's also a very smooth defenseman, somebody who is, and he's going to play in the NHL from now on. He's not waiver exempt, so he's going to earn his spot. He played over Ryan Sproul, somebody who has more potential in terms of point production. It was Ouellette and Nick Jensen who sort of came out of nowhere and stole a spot. But Ouellette will get re-signed. I don't think that he's going to be a big point producer, but I do think that he's somebody who eventually might put up some good penalty minutes for you. Martin Ferk is big question mark, because he scored the game-winning goal last night. He scored nearly 30 goals at the AHL level. He's somebody who has a tremendous slap shot and a tremendous snapshot, but to some extent, he's kind of like Timu Polkinen in that, although Ferk is a bigger guy and about 6'2", 200, it could be argued that his slap shot is the only thing that he has. His speed isn't quite at the NHL level, and he's not somebody who's going to be put out as a defensive specialist or somebody on the fourth line. So he's somebody who really needs a top line or a top nine or a top six role to succeed at the NHL level. And if you look at a sort of a deeper team like the Red Wings, I don't know if they have that. So he's somebody who may have to bide his time, may have to clear waivers, may get picked up on waivers again. And as much as I absolutely adore the guy, as much as I think that his slap shot is fantastic, I think he's a really risky bet on the fantasy hockey standpoint.
Thanks very much, George, for coming on and talking Grand Rapids prospects with us or Grand Rapids players and Detroit Red Wings prospects. For those of you who aren't familiar with George, follow him on Twitter. He's a prolific tweeter. He's a great follow. You can find him at George Malik. And that last name is spelled M-A-L-I-K. And you can find his articles on Kukla's Corner. Is there anywhere else we can look for your work, George?
That's it for now.
All right. Thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure indeed.
Great to hear from someone so close to the Calder Cup champion Grand Rapids Griffins. George covers the Griffins very closely at his blog, The Malik Report, which you can find on Kukla's Corner. Malik gives us his analysis of what Red Wings prospects are ready to make the jump to the Red Wings roster and a sleeper for next year's Fantasy Hockey League. Thanks so much for chatting with us, George. We also can't forget to thank you, the listener, for tuning in as well and giving us a review. If you haven't done a review yet, please take a few seconds to rate and review us. You wouldn't believe how much a few great reviews will do for our listenership. Please make sure to give us a follow on Twitter at @DPR_show. You can also follow our personal accounts at Zwambag, Zwambag, and at Pharling, Pharling. That's it for now. Talk to you soon, Peter.
Cheers.